Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and I'd like to welcome you to this Saturday morning here again on Suspense Radio. Saturday morning on the on the West Coast, Saturday afternoon on the East Coast. It's getting hammered right now by Storm Nemo, which now we have found Nemo. We know what he is. He's a blizzard, so no longer finding him anymore. I'm your host, John Robb, and we have a great show for you today. First up is going to be author prep battles. Next, we're going to have Amon Kabanchnik. And hopefully calling us from New York, if she's just in power, Wendy Corsi Staub is going to be stopping by here on the 11 o'clock hour. So a lot of things going on. Sit back, relax, enjoy whenever you listen, however you listen, whenever you listen, because hopefully 90 minutes of Suspense Radio starts now, but it might be 60. We'll see. I'd like to thank everybody, and we're going to be off and running. We would love to thank our next guest here on the show, author Brett Battles. We've had him on before. For fans of Brett, you do know that his Jonathan Quinn series is the popular one, along with now he's writing Project Eden. For those who don't know Brett Battles, you can check it out at brettbattles.com and see all the works that he's done. Brett, we'd like to thank you for coming back again. How you doing?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So like we said, we kind of talked a little bit off the air. You've been writing like a fiend, but you have been doing it for many years. Now you've kind of put yourself into 100% self-published realm. So fans of yours have probably noticed that you got a lot of books coming out a lot of times during the year, starting here now with book number 4 of the Project Eden thriller series called Ashes. Lay it out a little bit here, kind of like your journey leading up to everything that you're, you know, where you're at this particular time and, you know, and your Project Eden series.
Well, sure. Okay. I mean, I obviously, I mean, a lot of people know, maybe not everyone, but, you know, I was traditionally published for my first 5 books, which were the first 4 books of the Quinn series and my standalone No Return. And then lots of things are happening in publishing world, as we all know. Lots of changes there. Came time for whether I was going to continue on to a new contract or not with them, and we basically parted ways at that point. And it opened up an opportunity, you know, with the growing independent market, independently published, that I just wanted to try it. I wasn't sure yet if I was going to go looking for another publisher or just go the independent route, but I thought, well, you know, I'd like to at least stick my toe in it and see what's going on, because I've been hearing good things, like from Conrath, Joe Conrath, and people like that. And so I did. I put out a couple of books, or one book, Little Girl Gone, and then I think 2 months later, I put out Sick, which you guys were very helpful with for me with that, and I appreciate all you guys did there at Suspense Magazine with Sick when it came out. And it just kind of took off from there. The thing about the independent publishing that really plays great for me, I am just a naturally fast writer. Every writer writes differently. I happen to have a very rapid pace. It's just the way that I'm built. And why that is, I don't know. Who knows? It just is. But in the traditional world, they wanted one book a year. So I would end up, you know, slowing my writing process or sitting on my hands a good part of the year, and when I could have been doing other, you know, writing other books, which, in hindsight, I wish I had and just stockpiled them. But, you know, can't go back and change that now. But now with the traditional or with the independent publishing, I'm not tied to how many books I can put out a year. So if I'm going to write 2 books a year or 3 books a year or 4 books a year or even 5 or 6 or whatever, I can do that. And my natural pace is, you know, I can very comfortably get 4 books out a year. I could probably, you know, if I ramp things up, I could get 5, maybe 6 on a really strong year. The next year will be I'll be sleeping most of the following year. But what I'm trying to do now is a 4 to 5 book a year pace. And I put out 4 last year. The year before that, I actually put out, I think it was like 7, but 3 of them were books that I had written prior to that year that I had stockpiled and was able to kind of tune up and get out there and everything, which was great. And so, yeah, my fans have noticed that I've been coming out with, you know, every like 2, 3, 4 months, there's a new book, which is, I think it's fun because it's good. It works for me and it keeps a lot of the fans completely involved and interested in what I'm putting out, and it's a great thing, and I'm very thankful. It's been working great.
Yeah, and so like we said, you know, Jonathan Quinn is, you know, was your big popular series, but now you've come out with this Project Eden Thrillers, and it's a little bit kind of different. To explain a little bit, you know, when you talk about sick, I mean, when you first see the cover, you see the gas mask and everything, so then you start thinking apocalyptic kind of stuff, and it kind of works its way from there.
Right, exactly. I've always been a fan of those apocalyptical or pre-apocalyptical or even post-apocalyptical stories from even when I was a kid, and I just wanted to kind of tackle that myself. And my first foray into it was sick, which is kind of sets up the whole series that follows, about a group that's purposely trying to reduce the population of the planet so that they can give the human race, in their mind, the unneeded restart. And and then what happens there, the other people who are trying to do everything they can to keep this massive, you can't even just call it a genocide, but I mean the killing off of the human race from happening, or, you know, or at least try to save as many people as they can. And so Sick is the first one, and it's kind of chronicles a test run, and then after Sick comes Exit 9, and when things start get going, and then Pale Horse, Ashes came out in December. The next one will be Eden Rising, which comes out hopefully by the end of June. That's the plan right now. And I will possibly, if I can make it work, I'll have the 6th book out in December on that one.
Jeez.
So that's the plan on that one. But it is a popular series. You know, nothing is as popular as the Quinn series, but it is a very popular series for me. And the thing about the Project Eden fans is, you know, unlike even the Quinn books or any of the other series that I might be working on, which are, you can pick up any of the books and they're basically, you could read it as a standalone if you wanted to, although if you read the series, you'd get the overarching story going on, but that's not necessary. With the Project Eden book, they are closely intertwined so that you really need to start at the beginning and work your way through, or you're going to just be lost if you pick up right in the middle. And each of the books doesn't always end they tend to end on cliffhangers or things like this. So, you know, I get a lot of, when's the next one? When's the next one? Which is
right.
I love that. I love that. That's a lot of fun for me. And it keeps me motivated, too. So that all works out very well.
And, you know, and what it's able to do, I mean, because Jonathan Quinn and the Project Eden series are two totally separate things. So you're able to kind of walk two different paths, you know, well, as an author. So you're just expanding yourself and making yourself a better writer because you're kind of writing in two separate genres when you have both of them. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what I love also about the whole independent route is I can write whatever I want now. You know, I write these spy thrillers with Jonathan Quinn. I write the quasi sci-fi, but I don't know if I'd quite qualify it as that. Maybe the apocalyptic Project Eden series. I write the straight thriller with the Logan Harper books. And then I've also got a straight lit novel that I put out that I'd written years ago that I was able to put out called The Pull of Gravity that's out there. So I can write in any genre if I want to, and I hope to. I want to continue to do that. I've even put out a YA book that the first of a series that I hope to get back to soon. So it's liberating that way, and then jumping from genre to genre and being able to write in all these, they do, you're absolutely right. They do help me become hopefully a better writer and help me write each of the specific genres better because I can bring a new knowledge to when I do the Quinn books from something I may have figured out in the Project Eden books or something I might have figured out in the Logan books will help me in my, if I want to do another literary book. I don't know. It's great, though. I love it.
Well, you know, this is the first time that we've talked to you since you went 100% self-publishing, and I can just tell just from talking to you right now that you just sound a lot more free and like the chains have been broken and just a lot more loose, you know, with your writing. And that's the one thing that, you know, you kind of got out of jail.
Well, yeah, in a way. Yeah,
you kind of got the handcuffs off a little bit because you're a lot more free.
I think the biggest thing was that the first year I was independent, I mean, it was great, but I still had a lot of concern. I mean, a lot of it, am I going to be able to continue writing full time and all this stuff? Because you never know. You know, you're jumping into something. Am I burning bridges by doing this? Am I cutting off any possibilities? But that was in 2011, and you know, I made it through 2011. 2012 has been great. I've been getting new readers all the time. I'm still writing full time and having a great time. And doing very well that way, and 2013 has started off great. I mentioned to you offline. I actually have a new book coming out in March. It's a whole new series. It's actually not just me. My friend and author Robert Gregory Brown and I are writing a new series, and our first book in that series called Poe, which is the first of our Alexandra Poe series.
Uh-huh.
Come out in March, hopefully around mid-March. We don't have quite the date yet. And that's exciting. That's another thing I wouldn't have been able to do before is co-write something with somebody else. And this is, you know, it's another thriller, but this time we have a female protagonist, which is great and exciting for me. And I'm just, you know, it's just yet another avenue I get to explore, which is fantastic. And it's all because of the of going independent and the success I've been able to have in the independent world. And I'm very appreciative of that. I can't even express how much.
Well, let's kind of talk a little bit about Project Eden here and the character Daniel Ash. Going back, you know, from Sick all the way up through Ashes, how would you kind of, you know, for people that are just kind of finding out about you, and again, frontbattles.com mm-hmm. is your website, how would you kind of say his journey's taken him from Sick now up through Ashes?
In Sick, you know, he starts off as just a guy in the Army who gets caught in a situation that he you know, completely has no idea, you know, even existed. You know, he wastes the beginning of Sick, right at the very first page. I'm not going to be giving away anything if anyone wants to read it, but right from the top, he wakes up to find his family ill, basically, and severely ill. And then all of a sudden, his whole world kind of drops out from under him. And he is forced to go on the run, and he finds out this whole underworld of these things that are going on that, you know, nobody knows about except for these different groups. And so he goes from being just like all the rest of us
in our secure little ignorant world of just regular life to being, you know, basically an important player in the rebel, if you will, the resistance that is going out there trying to stop this horrible, horrible thing from happening. And, you know, it's not always successful attempts. But he definitely grows into something completely different as he's going along. And he also has his kids with him, so he's got to deal with that too. So, and there are many, many other players in the series. It's a large cast, and we see stories. I set different stories throughout the world, so you can see what's going on all over the place, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to write. It wouldn't be so much fun to live through if it were real. I should say that.
That's the one thing that readers will notice too is this is a worldwide event. It's not like it's stuck in one little area or one little town.
No.
You take them worldwide, all around the world, to kind of see how everything and everything is dealing with that. That's kind of a very massive undertaking. When did you decide, okay, did you kind of lay it out on a map? Did you kind of, how did you kind of just start the whole outline of it?
Well, SICK was tended to be more concentrated in, since it was a test run. It was concentrated in the test run area, which was the California desert. But from that, from moving forward into Exit 9, when things really get going and into Pale Horse and all that beyond that, I knew that I couldn't just concentrate on things happening in the U.S. because this is a worldwide thing that they're trying to accomplish. So to show that, I needed to broaden that. I needed to create scenarios and scenes and characters that would bring the readers along and get readers interested in their story as they struggle to survive and they struggle to figure out what's going on. And that, to me, that's the fun of it. I always love these big, wide stories with these, that cover large areas, as long as they're handled well. The thing to always remember when doing something about like this, it's not so much the place where they are, although that is important, but it's really the characters. If you're creating characters that people can care about and can get interested in and can like sink their fingers into and hold on to, those that makes those wide spread out scenes all pull together and work into like a really nice cohesive piece that people will enjoy and want to read more, and they'll want to know what happened with this guy. They'll finish a scene that might be set in India, and I'll take them back to Montana, or I'll take them over to London, or something like that. And they'll go, and as I'm taking away, the thought is, no, I want to know what happened here in India. But then you start reading the other stuff, and then I take you away from that, and they go, no, I want to know what happened in Montana. And then and then you get back to the other. It's just it's great. It's just. Keeps you pulling you along, and that's storytelling to me, and that's what I enjoy.
Yeah, and the thing is that you probably, the series is probably going to continue to just go on. I don't think you're going to say, okay, there's only going to be 8 books and this is going to be it. You're just going to continually go on just for the sheer fact of this is something that would continually go on in the world. It's not anything that's going to be fixed in 5 years or whatever. It's going to be
right.
It's going to be something.
I'm not sure about the length at all. I have not given myself any. I'm going to end it after X amount of books. It's just how long the story tells itself to me. I could foresee where, I might end this particular series of it and have a second series that takes off where that one's left off, if that makes any sense, where
But that was going to be my next question was, did you have any kind of secondary characters now within book 4 that you're kind of looking at saying, let's maybe he breaks off a little and we start exploring the kind of adventures that he gets himself involved into and things like that. Have you kind of been thinking about that and maybe running parallel?
I have secondary characters in almost all of the books that, I could definitely do that with. It could be a thing where if I feel like, okay, I've
told this part of the story, and I in the series, and I say, okay, well, let's pick up everything in 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, or 2 months from now, and maybe focus on some other people that maybe weren't even in this original series, or maybe were, and let's see what happens there, because they have different challenges at that point, you know, and that's something that appeals to me as a possibility. Right now, this is you listening to me brainstorming, so don't hold me, you know, to any of this. Not a promise.
Yeah, I mean, and so because you do write so much, when do you kind of sit down and you say, hey, you know what, today's going to be Project Eden, and then tomorrow you're going to do Jonathan Quinn, and kind of go back
right.
and forth. How are you able to kind of separate yourself from all that?
Well, honestly, I basically map out my year pretty much. I mean, I know for sure what I want to be doing for the next 6 months, and I know in vaguer terms like what the next books after that 6 month period is over that I want to work on. I'm just not sure where they're going to fit in. I know how long it takes me to write a book, and
right.
I can look at a calendar and I can say, okay, so I'm going to write it from here to here, and a little bit of edit, you know, and then you put in some play time because, I mean, like lax time that stretches in there because things don't always go as planned. But then you do that and then you go, okay, so by here I should be starting this book. And then by here I should be starting this book. And I know that, okay, I just did I just brought out Ashes in December. So I know I need to bring out the next, you know, the Project Eden book as soon as possible, but I got to do another Quinn in between there. And
right.
So that means the next Project Eden probably won't come out until June, especially since, you know, Rob and my book is also coming out. So, you know, in that part, it becomes a very clinical scheduling issue. But, it's my job. My writing is my job. I sit down at my desk every day and I write and get my, you know, try to get to a word count that I look at for every day so that I can keep my progress going. And it works for me because that's just the pace that I write at. So it's fine. You know, I don't try to do more than I am capable of doing that would make me write bad stuff, hopefully. You know, I do it at the speed that'll allow me to go to write, to keep the quality at the level that I am happy with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and again, we're speaking here with author Brett Battles, author of the Jonathan Quinn series and the Project Eden series, along with Logan Harper series. You got three series going on. Now, are you – and BrettBattles.com is his website to check everything out. Now, are you going to be on the road? Are you doing some events this year? What you got lined up, VoucherCon, ThrillerFest, things like that out there?
I've been playing with the idea of going to VoucherCon this year. The new independent route, it's, you know, obviously bookstores, you know, because most of my sales are ebooks now, so I'm not really doing any book tours that way. And I haven't been hitting as many conferences because my time, quite honestly, is better spent writing, you know,
right.
getting that out there. I do think I probably will hit BoucherCon in the fall. In Albany, I believe it is this year, and I just need to sign up for it. That would probably be a good idea. But that's about the major thing I have on my schedule. Nothing. Oh, I'm teaching at the Crime Writers, the Southern California Crime Writers Association Conference. I think that's what it's called. It's in June, I believe, in Pasadena. I'm teaching a class on independent publishing, or my particular area is the nuts and bolts of independent publishing. I'm actually going to be co-teaching that with Elise Din Petrillis, who is my editor on the books, my books now, and she can speak to editing, and I'm going to speak to some of the other nuts and bolts about going out on your own. So that'll be fun. But that's about all I've got worked up right now, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I can definitely understand what you mean by, you know, with everything being ebook and this and that, things have changed in a lot of authors opting to, hey, you know, I don't have a hardcover, so what am I going to do, show them this or that? But, it, you know, in retrospect, it's still, you know, people still be able to contact you, and I mean, you know, your site, and be able to email you and let you know what they think or anything else like that. So you're still staying connected, which is a good thing.
I think I am more connected with my fans now than I have ever been, because through Facebook and Twitter and things like an email, I hear more from my fans than I ever did in my traditional publishing years. And it's great. You know, every day I'm interacting with somebody, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, I have a author Brett Battle page on Facebook, which, by the way, you know, everyone out there, if you want, please like that page, and you'll get my updates there. I don't inundate too much. And I'm also on Twitter and, you know, at Brett Battles, which is easy. And you know, I just throw some fun stuff up there every now and then. And it's great. It's a great way to, and if people, you know, contact send me messages, I answer everything. You know, I always reply. So it may take me a few days, but I do reply.
Yeah, well, I know right now you're doing some stuff up in Northern California, so I'm going to let you get to that. And I want to thank you for coming on, though, Brett. Hey,
well,
it's been great. And, you know, we'll talk later and, you know, keep us up to date on everything that's going on. And don't forget to send over those review copies to us.
All right, I need to do that. Well, we'll get you a copy of Poe. We'll get you a copy
That'll be a good one.
Whatever else you guys want, you just let me know.
I got like five different e-readers in the house.
Three.
I got every format you can get.
I was going to say I have two, but I actually have three now that I think about it.
Yeah, you know, with the iPad, the Sony reader, with the Kindle. Yeah. I mean, I got like anything, a Nook, I don't know, I got everything.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, okay, Brett, hey, man, again, it's been great. You have fun doing what you're doing. We'll talk with you later, and thanks again for coming on and letting us talk about all the stuff you got going on.
All right, thanks, John. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
All right, man, have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye. So, again, everybody, that is author Brett Battles, again, author of the Jonathan Quinn series, Project Eden series, Logan Harper series. You can catch him at brettbattles.com for all the stuff that he's got going on, one of the most tremendous writers out there, especially in the kind of genre where, you know, I mean, it's a lot of fast paced. Jonathan Quinn is, you know, kind of like, you know, the espionage, you know, thriller kind of series. And then you have Project Eden, which is a much different kind of more of a worldwide kind of thing. So you just check out everything that Brett's got going on, because it's definitely one that you can put on your radar. Hey, and the good thing about ebook authors are books are inexpensive. You can get as many as you want. You can put them on there. You can get them right away. And, you know, you can just enjoy them instead of having to worry about, is my bookstore going to carry them and things like that. I mean, I've been praising ebooks for a long time, and I'm going to continue to do it. We're going to be back here with our next guest. His name is Aman Kabanchenk. Does a lot of great stuff. Blood on the Stage is what he does, and he goes back and he looks at and he annotates a lot of the plays that are done in the crime, mystery, things like that in the certain areas. Or eras, brings them on, lets you know what's going on with them, and just kind of breaks them all down with all the stuff that's got going on. It's a very interesting concept, and I think you guys would really enjoy it. So he's going to be on next, and hopefully, like I said, Wendy Corsi-Staub will be joining us. We don't know about her. She found Nemo, and it just wasn't any good, and she is up in New York, so we don't know if she has power or not, but we will find that out. So we will talk with you here in a couple minutes. Need to get a drink or something. So in the meantime, I do have something new for you, though.
We'll be right back.
I'd like to welcome everybody back here from break. And again, check out Brett Battle's last author that we just had on there. And we're moving right on here to our next guest. Like I said, he is the author of Blood on the Stage, goes back to different eras. I'm going to let him talk about it. Aman Kabatchik, how are you doing today? I want to thank you so much for coming on and joining us.
It's my pleasure. I appreciate your interest in my books.
Yes, and for those of you who want to check it out, it's A-M-N-O-N, and it's K-A-B-A-T-C-H-N-I-K.
Right. Amnon Kabatchik.
Kabatchik. And so, like I said, you know, when people come on, what they're going to see is it's called Blood on the Stage. It's a very interesting concept because you've taken the eras of plays and things that they've done with the crime, mystery, fiction, books or and plays and everything else on stage, but you've kind of reinterpreted it. Kind of explain a little bit about what the books are so people understand, because it's a great concept.
Okay. The book that just came out, Blood on the Stage, 1975-2000, covers plays in the genre of suspense that were produced during that era, 1975-2000.
Uh-huh.
Earlier than that, I had the volumes, three previous volumes, that covered the entire 20th century earlier. The first one, 1900 to 1925, the second volume, 1925 to 50, the third, 1950 to 75, and the present volume that just came out, 1975 to 2000. In other words, within these four volumes, I covered the milestone plays, the key plays in the genre of detective, mystery, and suspense that were produced during the entire century.
Right.
The plays cover a plot synopsis, production data, actors, directors, theaters, critiques and reviews by top scholars and reviewers, and various incidental elements that occurred while for the playwrights and the directors and the actors and the mounting of these productions.
Because, you know, besides books, plays are probably one of the most purest forms of entertainment dating back, well back, you know, into, you know, BC times and things like that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's like the Shakespearean age and everything.
Even earlier than that, the ancient Greeks were awash with blood. Lots of crime, treachery, murders began with Aeschylus and Sophocles and Euripides in ancient Greeks. And moved on, as you just mentioned, into Shakespeare, into various other playwrights throughout the passage of the centuries into the 20th century. And I was simply attracted to this genre from an early date as a child who was brought up in a faraway country in Tel Aviv, Israel, actually reading and writing from right to left. I was attracted initially by the picture covers, these exciting picture covers that came then to Israel with the pocketbooks, the soft covers. I was very attracted to these books and began actually to study English. I began to study English throughout these initial paperbacks and American movies. So at an early age, I fell into the works of Agatha Christie, L. Stanley Gardner, Ellery Queen, S.S. Van Dyne, and others in this classic mystery writers, and began to read first the novels, then to collect novels in the genre, and then because my profession became directing plays, I began to collect play scripts, many out of print, in this genre.
Mm-hmm.
So actually my books literally combine my love for the genre in terms of a book reader, a voracious reader and collector in the genre, and my profession, which is directing plays. So this combination led to the book blood on the stage. That's, in a nutshell, is the history of it.
So looking at the book that you have out now, which is Blood on the Stage, 75 through the year 2000, which
right.
kind of plays kind of stand out in your mind as the ones that, you know, are, you know, I mean, the good ones right now, you know, the ones that just kind of stand out amongst the rest of them, like that really just, you know, keep that essence of, you know, the way the plays are and the way that they play these out on the stage and, you know, and just keep that essence alive.
Yes. Well, in this last book, I'm covering 80 plays, 80
wow.
plays in the genre. And these include plays by such authors as playwrights, authors as David Mamet, Ira Levin, who passed away recently, Stephen Sondheim tried to write not only musicals, but strict mysteries that didn't do too well. Sam Shepard, Reginald Rose, Charles Ludlam, Aaron Sorkin, who first wrote A Few Good Men on Broadway, and then, of course, moved to the West Coast and became a top movie writer and television creator. William Buckley, Jr., Larry Gelbart, and more recently, Rupert Holmes, with his Mystery of Edwin Drood and others as well. All these, plus Ariel Dorfman, Tom Stoppard from England, Anthony Schaefer, Jeffrey Archer, and the composer Andrew Lloyd Webber. All these and more dabbled in adding to their ink lots of blood.
And so do you have kind of one that, you know, that like your people, because out there now sometimes it's kind of difficult, you know, to, unless you're like on Broadway or maybe in a big city, that they can maybe check these plays out. Do they, you know, do their local theaters have things like that? How would they kind of go about finding these, you know, things out and be able to enjoy the plays that are out there today?
That's a very good question. In my book, by the way, I'm trying, it is anything but a dry reference book.
Right.
The books literally cover in detail the synopsis of all these plays. So actually readers who do not have the luxury of seeing these plays, who do not live, let's say, in London or in New York, can still enjoy the sense of these plays by reading it in these books. And hopefully some producers, local producers, will become excited or incited by the description of these plays and mount some of these. Many of these plays deserve a revival, and certainly they deserve a study.
Mm-hmm.
And while there are many studies about movies in the genre and even radio suspense broadcasts and television, I believe that this is probably the only book that covers the legitimate stage methodically in this genre. So readers can still, I think, enjoy the sense of these plays, and hopefully local producers will also find enough interest in these plays to revive them.
Yeah, because that's the one thing. When you look at those, you know, the Agatha Christie's and some of those, you know, the Shakespearean
right.
works and things, those things are timeless. Now, some people have maybe tried to change them up a little bit, but when they're in their purest form of how they were, I mean, they're still just, like I said, they're still just timeless, which is
absolutely.
Why
absolutely.
You know,
I myself, by the way, directed a number of Agatha Christie plays, including...
Which ones did you do?
Ten Little Indians was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And now it is called Everywhere and Then There Were None, which
right.
was the title of the original novel. I directed that. The Mousetrap. I directed The Mouse, which with its wonderful surprise ending. And and I dabbled in quite a number of them. I directed off-Broadway a revival of the old classic The Cat and the Canary, a very delicious mystery melodrama. And Winterset by Maxwell Anderson, I directed that one off-Broadway. And in a number of universities and summer stock, I directed scores of them. Death Trap and Sleuth,
Death Trap.
Dial M for Murder, Angel Street, which is known also as Gaslight, quite a number of them, and always with great deal of fun to do these. And really,
right.
Most of them certainly deserve revival. And as you just said, they are still being revived. The Agatha Christie plays are being revived. And
right.
Certainly others as well. Hopefully, there is some lack or in the genre in terms of new plays, let's say on Broadway or even in London. Lately, there aren't that many. There's some decline in terms of producing this genre. But I hope and I'm sure that somewhere around the corner a play is waiting to be mounted again, either in New York, perhaps off Broadway, in London, or elsewhere, in L.A., whatever, that will rekindle interest and bring some fresh blood into this genre.
Yeah, that's the one thing that, you know, I notice when I kind of look around and we look at plays tonight to go see, because we go to New York once a year for Thriller Fest, and we always like to maybe go to Broadway. Is, you know, I mean, the musicals and stuff are great, but there's really, in the genre, there really isn't any of those great, you know, old plays. You know, like, I remember you just said Death Trap, and I remember seeing the movie of it with Michael Caine,
yep.
And they had the movie, and that was great, and they just don't have those kinds of, when I was in high school, we did Arsenic and Old Lace.
Yes,
you know,
which I directed as well. A wonderful, yeah. Delicious comedy mystery. Absolutely,
oh, those
delightful.
Are great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, when you go and you see the actors act this out on stage, and, you know, and it's not all the special effects. It has to literally be the written work and in the pure form of bringing it on stage with all the special effects that the actors have to create everything on there. That's more better than bringing a book to a movie, is you bring a book to a play, because then you can actually see the emotion and the things,
yeah.
behind it all. Instead of getting it all cluttered with all the special effects and, you know, the blow-up scenes and all the other stuff.
I agree. But since you mentioned the musicals, thankfully, my book, by the way, the latest book, the 1975 to 2000, does cover the musicals like Chicago,
right.
Assassins, Sweeney Todd, Phantom of the Opera, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, and others. All these musicals do have the touch of the mystery in them, as you know. So,
yeah.
In this phase, in this area, in the musical area, somehow the mysterious elements and the bloody elements are still there, but it is a straight phase that somehow there's some lack now in it, and hopefully some enterprising playwrights will come back and bring it back to life.
And now, when you go back, because you started back, you know, early with, you know, like in the 1900s and work your way up in,
right.
25-year increments, how much research and how did you find kind of all of the things to put together? Where did you kind of find all of those things to put them in there?
Yes. What helped me a lot, number one, was my personal library. I have a very, very advanced library of not only books in this genre. I'm talking about novels and true crime and studies of literature in this kind of literature, but also play scripts, which I began
mm-hmm.
to collect at an early age, and I have at my own fingertips many out-of-print plays in this genre. But I also went near and far. I went to Cornell University's libraries.
Okay.
I spent long hours in New York at the Lincoln Center's Library for the Performing Arts. And I found some obscure plays right here in Los Angeles at the Academy Awards building, old plays. For example, I found Everybody Comes to Rick's, which is the obscure play on which the movie Casablanca is based on.
Right.
So I found the play, the play script, which is almost impossible to find anywhere else, and utilized it in one of my books. And I also found old melodramas that are literally lost plays. I found them in those searches, and somehow brought them to life in my books.
And now you're from Southern California, so I'm taking it that a lot of the plays that you put on are put on here around in the Los Angeles area, correct?
Actually, I've been in Santa Monica, where I live now, for the last 5 years, and there must be something in the waters of Santa Monica, because during the last 5 years, I published 5 books, the 4 volumes of Blood on the Stage, and a book, Sherlock Holmes on the Stage,
right,
which is a book that covers the appearances of the great detective in play throughout the 20th century. So, 5 books in 5 years, I managed to write with a great deal, by the way, of joy. I love every minute of it during the last 5 years. But before that, actually, New York City was my turf. I directed a number of plays off-Broadway. And as a professor of theater in some universities, I directed at university theaters and at some summer companies, and abroad in Israel and Canada as well.
And so what, and again, we're speaking here with Aman Kabaknik, and it's AmanKabaknik.com to find out a lot more information on,
yes,
on the 4 book,
yes,
here, Blood,
yes,
on the Stage. So what do you kind of have coming up now, you know, in the future? You're going to be doing a lot more plays. You're going to be directing some things around here.
Hopefully
what
I'll
are you
be
gonna,
directing
gonna be
as well. The last play that I directed was off-Broadway about a year or two ago, Ladies in Retirement, for the Pulse Ensemble Theater off-Broadway. This is a gothic thriller, which we revived, and hopefully I'll be doing more of those. But my main project now is I'm going back all the way back to the ancient Greeks. Now that I covered the 20th century, it's sort of a prequel. I'm going all the way to the ancient Greeks, and it will be either 1 or 2 volumes all from the ancient Greeks to the tag end of the 19th century. That's my next project. So I'm talking about, again, with a concentration on played in this particular genre of crime, suspense, and detection.
Kind of bringing like those Greek tragedies that,
yes,
kind of came out when people actually, you know, got dressed up and went to the theater, and that was their form of entertainment, where today, of course, we have 100 different forms of entertainment that, you know, people can go find out about.
Right. This was initially, of course, the only kind of entertainment, those old Greek plays, which, by the way, are still wonderful. They are really terrific plays. No wonder that some of them literally were left for posterity, and because they've been revived again and again throughout the centuries. They are very good plays. I'm having a great time going back to them. And I've just completed the early cycle of the Greek plays and the Roman plays. And I'm moving into the Middle Ages, and then we'll go forward into Shakespeare and Ben Jonson, and the horror plays of the Jacobean horror plays, and all the way into those wonderful melodramas of the 19th century. And that includes, by the way, plays by Charles Dickens and Wilkie Collins, and all the way, it will go all the way to actually the first play about Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes by William Gillette. In other words, the book will start with the first detective, Oedipus. You may recall that Oedipus the king investigated a murder that occurred in Athens. And there is a surprise ending because he discovers at the end that he himself is the murderer. So he was, in a sense, the first detective, Oedipus, leading all the way to the greatest of them all, Sherlock Holmes, at the tag end of the 19th century, the 1899 play Sherlock Holmes, written by William Gillette.
Wow. See, those are the things that I never knew. A lot of people probably didn't know is maybe the progression of how that, you know, kind of made it and how those things kind of happened. And that's why it's great when you read their book. You kind of get the background and the sense of all those things.
I'm trying to get the continuity. Exactly. You hit it right. I'm trying to get the continuity, how it started and how it evolved, almost like step by step, style by style, innovation by innovation, all the way through. It's almost like the history of the theater, in a sense, though I'm concentrating on my beloved genre, which is, you know, the thriller suspense genre.
So if you had to say Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie, which one are you kind of a little bit more partial to?
Personal to?
Yeah, which one do you kind of gravitate to a little bit more as, you know, that you, not really, maybe like a little bit more, but which one do you kind of gravitate to more, Sherlock Holmes or more Agatha Christie style stuff?
It's a great question, and I have to think about it a little bit. I've done more Christie, I've done more Agatha Christie, but I'll tell you, I've not directed Sherlock Holmes, but reading it, again, the play is very solid, still is, in terms of plot, continuity, reaching climaxes at the end of each act, very clever. So that Sherlock Holmes, the William Gillette one, which, by the way, is billed as by William Gillette and Arthur Conan Doyle, but actually Gillette adapted 5 or 6 of Conan Doyle's short stories into the play. The play still holds beautifully, really very good, though I never had a chance to stage it. It's very, very good. And I'm trying to think. The only one I directed an evening, a bill of one-act plays adapted from short stories by Conan Doyle, and that was a joy to do. But I'm kind of thinking back, I don't think, and of course Sherlock, Conan Doyle himself wrote only one full-length play about Holmes in, I think, 1916, only one, based on his short story about the Speckled Band, which is his greatest short story. Conan Doyle himself adapted it into a full-length play, which didn't do that well, and somehow he never went back to writing more plays about Holmes. What Conan Doyle did do, he wrote some historical plays in addition to historical novels, but all those are forgotten by now. Conan was hoping to be remembered as the author of historical novels, but all those are forgotten by now, and the only creation by Conan Doyle that we do remember is Sherlock Holmes, which he tried to kill off.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact,
when
William Gillette asked permission from Conan Doyle, sent him a telegram asking permission, may I marry Holmes in his play? Doyle answered, you can marry him, you can murder him, you can do what you like with him. Doyle just wasn't interested.
Yeah, he was just done, I think, at that point.
Yeah, he couldn't prophesy the fact that we'll remember him only through Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ahmad, this is fascinating stuff. We want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us all of the works, everything that you put together. Like I said, you know, besides books, plays have got to be the purest form of entertainment that have been around for centuries and will continue to be around. And hopefully, you know, more people start gravitating back to the theater and start, you know, enjoying these kinds of things, because it's really how we kind of got where we are today, is books and plays. That's where we got. That's how we got here.
Yes. I share your sentiments, really.
Yes.
And
well,
thank you so much, really. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on, and we appreciate it. We will talk with you, we'll talk with you soon when you have, book 5.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you
so much.
All right.
You have a good day. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, again, everybody, that is Aman Kabashnik, and it is amankabashnik.com, KABATCHNIK, for Blood on the Stage, to check out everything. It looks like we have Wendy Corsi-Staub here on the line, and we are going to be back with her in just a second. So she is Brave Nemo, and we will be here in just a second to talk with Wendy. So enjoy this. everybody back here to the last segment we have of the show. It's great that we're able to get Wendy here on the phone because we didn't know. We heard Friday. We didn't know if she was going to be able to make it or not. But I'll tell you what, nothing's going to stop her from coming on. She's battled it through the snow. And so, Wendy, we want to thank you so much for coming on today. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm buried in a drift, but I'm okay. Sun is shining now.
And like we were talking about off the air, I mean, it's kind of quiet. Everybody's kind of indoors.
Yeah.
It's a great time for a serial killer maybe to do his stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's just kind of that intriguing situation that you can think of. And now you have the book Shadow Killer. It is
right.
The last here in the trilogy, which started off with Night Watcher and Sleepwalker and now Shadow Killer. So
yep.
Kind of give everybody a little bit about your latest venture, because this is something that this is all brand new.
Yeah, this one, and actually this is the first time I've ever done this. With Shadow Killer, I went to the past, and because Night Watcher is the first book in the series. It opens on September 10th, 2001 in New York City. And then the next one, Sleepwalker, picks up 10 years later with a copycat serial killer on the loose. So now we pick up exactly where that left off. I had a huge twist at the end of Sleepwalker, and I realized that to tell this story fully, we had to see where these characters were before 2001. So the book opens in the present, and then we go back to the year 2000 to sort of see how everything was set up, and that's part one of the novel. And then we project forward to the present day and pick up the action where Sleepwalker left off. Does that make sense?
Because when you started this, did you know that, okay, I'm going to do this trilogy and that's kind of the way that you had planned it out? Or when you started maybe thinking of writing a book like Night Watcher, then that's when it kind of hit you that you're like, you know what, I think I want to, you know, continue further on with it.
Well, I have the basic concept, and I don't want any spoilers. Like, without giving away the spoiler,
right.
I have the basic concept of Shadow Killer, and I needed to know that from the very beginning of the first book. But there was a twist that unfolds in Shadow Killer that I really didn't know until I started writing it. So that was after the first books were already done, and then I had to go back in and tweak those first two manuscripts because I realized it was that the seeds had been planted and I just didn't even realize it. And it was one of those twists that shocked even me. So I love it when that happens. So I just went with it.
So, yeah, so that's one of those kind of odd moments for an author where you even kind of get shocked a little bit about, you're like, wow, I had no idea that this was going to happen this way.
Exactly. It was sort of, it's almost like you're reading the book as a reader when you're writing it, like you can't wait to see what happens next. And when you hit that momentum, when you're writing a thriller, it's a really good feeling. The book sort of writes itself.
Yeah. So for people that, you know, are just, so they haven't picked up the series yet and now they're hearing about it maybe for the first time, this is one that you should probably read in order. Would you agree?
I would agree, yeah, just to avoid the spoiler, but they all sort of stand alone as complete books of their own. I mean, there aren't any dangling endings where you would feel like the first story is incomplete or the second story is incomplete. It takes it one level further, but I would say read them in order. Night Watcher is first, and the beauty of this is that my publisher, HarperCollins, released these at in consecutive months. The first two, they were, so readers didn't have to wait a year between each book. So they
right.
were, the first two came out in September and October, and now this one went on sale in January, and that's been really nice because readers can pick up all three at the same time and they don't have to wait.
And is there some, you know, do you have, like, in essence, is there something that you can kind of say that you, when people read the book, that they're going to be like, you know, wow, this is, I kind of got it right, like I got a sentence right, or, you know, something to that effect that you can kind of look back into the book and say, that's just one part that I just really nailed that kind of captures the essence without giving anything away, but just kind of like, you just kind of felt that way when you were finished with it.
Was there anything that I felt?
Yeah, anything, yeah, like looking back at it now, you're like,
yeah.
Oh, I really got that part right.
Yeah, there was, you know, this character, there's a character that is in book three and plays a major role. I won't give away the gender even, but the way that character was set up from the very beginning, when I had to go back in after this new twist presented itself, I saw that you know, the character I had created really suited the twist that I wanted to carry out in book three. So, yeah, there were certain little characteristics. It's a very unusual person who has some quirks, and it really worked well. It did.
Yeah, and so, and that's one of the things, because one of the items that, you know, when you're a thriller or a suspense writer and things like that, you kind of have to say, okay, am I going to go more, you know, character driven? Am I going to go more plot driven? Do you kind of make that conscious decision when, you know, when you decide I'm going to sit down and do a book, that am I going to be more character in this? Am I going to be more plot in this?
You know, I always start out thinking plot driven because I always start with the basic concept, you know, what if. But as I plug different character types in, I start to realize that they're driving the story. So I think it's a little bit of both. And you know, from the concept of any, you know, I have any number of ideas on the back burner at any given time. And sort of they could, you know, if you give them to any different author and plug in their own characters, that plot will be carried out completely differently. So the way that I do it is I let the characters take over. They're my characters. And take it from there. You know what I mean?
And you know the other thing you do really well is you keep people updated a lot with your newsletter.
Yeah,
you
I
do
like
that
I
very
would,
well too.
Yeah, I have a really big mailing list, and I like to sort of update readers about not just what's on the shelves now, but what I'm working on right now.
Yeah, and that's always a good thing because I'm sure Nemo's going to get into the next newsletter somehow, right?
Yeah. Yes. Nemo will be here. I have to. You just reminded me. I have to go take some more pictures. But, you know, now it's the after pictures.
the aftermath now. Yeah.
Aftermath. Yeah. If I can shovel out the door, which my husband just did. To be fair, he was out there shoveling for hours to get credit.
So
worth.
Now, and is it difficult because you know Night Watcher came out in August 2012, and then you had, you know, September with Sleepwalker, and then just Shadow Killer came out in January. Is it hard to get all of that done in a short amount of time and still keep up the pace and everything that you wanted to accomplish with the trilogy?
You know what is a challenge? I would say I've always been a really fast writer. You know, I usually just do one draft. I revise as I go, and that's just my natural pace. So, you know, I was used to writing quickly. What I wasn't used to was the sort of the publicity machine that goes hand in hand with releases. Once you reach a certain stage in your career, you do tour, and I'm touring with every book, which I love. I love to get out there and meet readers. And you know, just going to conferences and sort of maintaining a higher profile. And that is something that takes away time from my writing. So I find that the juggling act is much more challenging now. Yeah. It's not something that I can't do. I love it. And, if I had it my way, I'd just clone myself and make the day twice as long. But I'm getting it all done so far. And I feel like my readers have been here with me for, you know, I've been doing this for, well, I've been writing and publishing for 20 years now. So I feel like they've hung in there. They have certain expectations, and I really want to deliver. I can do it all. I can do it. Ask my kids. I can try to do it all.
And the other thing, too, I mean, you know, coming out here in February is, you know, you kind of have, it was out in April, you're kind of bringing it back out again is in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
You know, what was, you know, when they kind of bring that back out, you know, what was kind of the thought process of being able to bring that one back out again?
Well, what we did was I have six thrillers. The first six thrillers I ever wrote were not available as digital books. You know, you can get them for your Nook or your Kindle. So we now, Harper has acquired the rights to all six, HarperCollins, and they will be putting them out every 2 months. Making them available. They were always in print and always available as paperback, you know, as mass market paperbacks. You could still get the book version. But now for the first time, every 2 months, beginning last, I think it was July, the first one, I've had a new digital release. So that's been great because readers are discovering me that way and then going back and finding out that I've written, you know, over 20 suspense novels over the year, and then they'll go back and read them.
Yeah, and the one thing when people go on your site is wendycorsistob.com to check out things. And I'm just kind of looking at your tour dates. I see you have something tomorrow, which I'm sure you probably will not be able to make. And
no, I am.
You are going to make it. You're going to make it out there. It's going to be open.
I rented a sled, and I'm getting up to Woodstock. Yeah, no, I'm going to Woodstock tomorrow. I'm signing in Woodstock, and then I'm flying up to Buffalo Monday morning, and I'm signing in my hometown up there on Lake Erie. Trust me, I am used to snow. I grew up in the blizzard belt of Western New York near Buffalo. So nothing really stops me. It takes a lot of snow to stop me. So
yeah, because you have a lot of dates that you're going out and signing. And the one thing, like you said, you've been publishing for 20 years, and what you've been able to see is the change in the marketing aspect that you have to do and the things that you have to do now to, you know, find more readers. Because a lot of the events that you kind of go to are a little bit changed, where maybe more people are doing things more digitally on the internet. How have you kind of evolved yourself? Do you kind of look at the year going forward and say, okay, I need to do more, you know, more digital things. I need to do more things on the internet, or, you know, how do you set all that stuff up, you know, for yourself going forward in 2013?
Well, I do, you know, I know that whenever I have a book coming out, I need to block out a lot of time for, you know, I do chats, I do guest blogs, you know, in terms of internet, I'm always on Facebook. I'm on, you know, every day. I interact with readers. I have a like the author page there, and I have a personal page. So, and I tweet, you know, I try really hard to reach out to readers who can't get there physically when I'm signing, you know. So it just added one more opportunity for me to connect with readers, because I do, you know, I listen to what they say. I listen to their feedback about my books, and I try to, you know, I it's not that I'm writing to order, but I would have to say I know they expect big twists from me. I know they want to see a villain masked behind a familiar face, you know, certain things. And I wouldn't know that if I didn't have all these opportunities to connect with them, you know, not just in person, but online. You know, I also will email back, like people will send me emails with feedback. I always appreciate it.
Right. And so with somebody like yourself who's been in the business for so long, you know, we always have a lot of authors and a lot of people who want to write, you know, read our magazine, they listen to the show and things like that. And so I always try to give a little tips and tidbits of, you know, writing and kind of how you go through the process. And the one question that's been coming to my mind that I've been asking a lot of authors is this one, and I think you're a perfect person to ask too, is the beginning or the end of a book, which do you feel has the most impact on a reader, but which is more difficult to write for the author?
Oh, by far the beginning is the most difficult to write, because everything is fresh and it can go in any direction. And I rewrite the beginning of every book, I would say, I mean, I rewrite it daily for weeks and months, because different scenarios will present themselves as you go along, and you need to go back and make it true to what you started out with. So the beginning is just really a tough job for me. By the time I reach about two-thirds of the way through, it writes itself. I can do twice or three times as many pages a day as I do when I'm writing the beginning. But I think in terms of what you're leaving the reader with, you can't afford to slack off on either end of it, because you need to grab them really early, and you have to leave them satisfied. So that's a tall order with every book.
And so when you're writing for a trilogy, when you write the ending of, like, Night Watcher, which is the first book in the series, you know it's going to lead itself into Sleepwalker, which
right.
is the second book in the series. Now you kind of have to be conscious of both the ending of one that runs into the beginning of another. So does that make it easier for the second book, or does that make it more difficult? Because now you know how you have to do it.
Yeah, no, I think it's much more difficult because the stakes are higher. We've already invested, you know, time in this character. We want to see what's going to happen next, and you really care, and I care. So I feel like going into the second book is almost, I don't know, I sort of feel like I can't let the characters down either, you know. It's been challenging to learn how to do trilogies. I've done, this was my second one that I've done for Harper, and, you know, I enjoy it. The next one, I have a new three-book contract, but the books aren't tied together by character. They're tied together by theme. And I found that the writing process is not as challenging because I don't have to go back and maybe look in book one to see what color somebody's eyes were. You know, those
right.
types of details really slow you down when you have to be consistent, and that takes a lot of time.
And speaking of character, the main character in the trilogy is Alison Taylor McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you kind of, how would you kind of sum her up to readers? Kind of like, who is Allison McKenna?
Well, you really see her grow over the course of this this series, because when you meet her, she's in her early 20s. And, you know, people in their early 20s, she's single, she's living in New York, she's come out of a traumatic past, and she's sort of, you know, it's all about her and trying to rebuild her life. And at that age, your concerns are much different than they are when you are a married mother of three living in the suburbs, which is where she is when we pick up on the second and third book. So you see her character evolve. I wanted to get across, too, that almost like to parallel, you know, September 11th changed a lot of things, and it changed a lot of people, certainly, you know, in New York where she is and where I live. So I wanted to parallel that. I wanted to show that, you know, what mattered when you woke up in the morning on September 10th was completely different from what mattered in the morning on September 12th. You know, you just sort of see her priority shift. You see her grow up overnight. And then you see her become sort of a shadow of who she will be 10 years from now. You know, then it's all about her husband and kids, and she's worried about her children in the next two books. It's not all about Allison anymore.
Right. It's more of the well-rounded. And when you're doing something kind of a trilogy like that, you're able to expand more on the character because, you, of course, you not only do you have more words, but you kind of have more time, where it's not like you're trying to get, you know, the character all going in a thriller book and plot everything going along with it. You can expand a lot more. But that also leads to, like you say, some potential problems because you've got to remember, what did they do in the back? What did they do in the last story? Okay, I can't have the car wrong, or I can't have the eye colors wrong, because your readers are going to email you and tell you, you can't do that because you just screwed up. You said they have green eyes. Now all of a sudden they have brown eyes.
Oh, yeah. And you will get letters, believe me. And it goes much deeper than that. I mean, it's that's just one example. It's also that the character has to stay true to just the innate sense of who they are. You know, people change, but there's a sort of a really essential, it's just who is Allison, who was she years ago, and what would make sense? Like, how would she behave in any situation? And you have to stay true to that, too. So you're kind of limited going forward in how much you can do. She can grow, but she can't become somebody else in the new book. And by the same token, neither can your villain, and neither can the other characters that you've established. You know, there's a cop who is in all three, a detective, a homicide detective, Rocky Menzelo, and his character was really fun because I didn't see where he was going. You know, I knew that he loved his wife, and then what happens to him in books two and three, kind of caught me off guard, and I felt like, in the end, you feel like Rocky has the ending that he should have, and so even his character, I stayed true to who I had created in the beginning, with some twists. So it was really fun.
You always got to have the twist. That's
yeah.
The fun part.
That's what it's all about.
It's all about the twist and the pace, and that's the other thing when you're writing thriller, you know, and you have to keep the pace up. It's what I did was, I tried to explain to people the definition of what a thriller and a suspense and a mystery and a horror is. And when you write a thriller book, you have to keep the pace high. The pace is always continually to go fast, where, you know, more in a suspense, you can kind of build things up.
Yes.
Do you find it? I mean, I always think that thrillers are the most difficult books to write because of the pace. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's always about what is going to happen next. There's a ticking clock, and, there's so much foreshadowing, and you know that something big is coming right around the corner. It's sort of, you know, something's going to jump out at you. It's that, keeping that tension going for, you know, 400 or 500 pages. That's what you sign up for when you write a suspense novel.
Yeah. Well, and kind of outside the books right about now, and now that you're home, you're able to maybe turn on some Netflix or some Hulu and check out some shows. Is there anything right now that you're kind of watching that's kind of catching your eye? Any new shows that you're into?
You
that you're
bet. I bet you can guess too. The Followers. That's been
The Following. Yeah.
Yes, The Following. It's so compelling, and that show caught me off guard. I didn't know anything about it before we sat down to watch it, other than that Kevin Bacon was in it. I love Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, you gotta watch it. I watched it first. I didn't care what it was first. I said, oh, Kevin Bacon, I'm watching it.
He's great, right? I love him. And then once I saw the premise, you know, my husband said, I taped a show for you. You're going to love it. I said, was it The Following? The Following. Yeah. Yeah, he knows me so well. So that show has just captivated me. We're only two episodes in, I think, maybe three, but
yeah,
can't wait
three
till tomorrow night, Monday night.
And you know what I call it is Fox's newest 24.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who's involved. You
right.
don't know who's the bad persons now, the good people now. And now you
right.
start to wonder and you look back. I mean, I find it fascinating too. And you almost look back and say, damn, why did I think of something like that?
Exactly. And you know what? They've managed to fool me here and there. And that's hard, you know, because I write this stuff for a living.
Right.
The show is really similar to the kind of fiction that I write. So I feel like, you know, if they can, because I can usually see twists coming, if they can pull that off, it's a really well-written show. It's great. It's really, I recommend it.
Yeah, I have to say that if people haven't watched the show, when you see the ending of the first episode, you're going to be like, okay, anything in this show going forward can now happen.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And I think that that's the hook. And I think that that's what you, when you relay that, you try to hook that when you do the trilogy. It's like maybe you kill off a character that people didn't think you were going to kill off. And you're like, all right, Wendy's throwing the rules out of here. Now anything can happen. And that's the hook that you try to capture.
I always have in my mind when I write these books that things are not what they seem. You know, in real life, things are usually pretty much what they seem. But in my books, I always try to keep that in mind as I go. And, you know, you have to – it's like, I don't know, it's like a magic trick. I say that all the time. It's sleight of hand. You sort of – there's always more than meets the eye. And I owe that to my readers because – you know, I have to make them work a little bit hard for the ending. I don't want it to be a no-brainer. I don't want them to say, oh, I saw that coming. You know, so that's always in the back of my mind.
Yeah. And so when you go, so going forward now, you said you get the three-book deal and it's going to be standalone. So what is kind of the premise, since it's not going to be character-driven, you're going to have more of a plot-driven thing.
Yeah.
What is kind of the premise that you got?
Okay, the books are all linked by the notion, you know, it's all about social networking. It's all about the internet.
Uh-oh.
And so it was funny that you just happened to ask
Which
me that
I
question.
Which I call, of course, the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, yes. It's Facebook. But it is. It's all about the fact that you don't know who you're meeting online. You don't know who's behind that screen name usually. And, you know, people can say they're anybody they want to be. But the first book is about, it's about cyberbullying and it's about a social networking page. I made up a fictionalized Facebook. It's called People Portal. And the heroine has a teenage daughter. And so anyway, that's the first book. It's a domestic psychological suspense novel. And then the second one is a whole different set of characters. And this time they are bloggers. And so same premise, though, that you just don't know who's lurking on the internet. And there's a serial killer involved. And then the third one is very loosely plotted, but it will probably center around the dating world, internet dating.
Right, so like a Match.com, eHarmony kind of thing.
That kind of thing, which I have no experience in because I met my husband, you know, back in 1988. There was none of that, so I'm going to have to rely on research through friends, vicariously, I guess. But I like the idea of the internet tying things together. My agent really, you know, this was her idea, like just the nugget of an idea she threw out at me about a year ago. Like, wouldn't it be cool if you could do a trilogy, you know, based on the internet? And that's what I'm doing. But by the same token, these are the same kinds of books that I've been writing all along. There's still psychological suspense and domestic settings and, you know, strong characters.
Yeah, and with all the stuff that came out with the Manti Te'o and now all the other things,
it's like
now everybody's kind of wondering, who am I talking to?
Exactly, and that's exactly what I'm writing. It's so it's not the first time that's happened to me. I'm writing something, and then it kind of happens in real life. But I've been watching that, fascinated. You know, it just, I don't know. I am always careful. I try to be careful online and try to, you know, just maintain some privacy, but a lot of people are not that careful.
Yeah, I think it was on the Super Bowl or ad before where the girl sits there and she goes, yeah, my guy's a French model, and he walks up and he goes, bonjour, and
right.
he's like some, you know, geeky looking guy, you know. I mean, that's just
exactly.
the funny thing. And you can be anybody you want to on the internet, and that's really a very dangerous premise, and it's very a scary premise because you have, you know, teenagers thinking that they're talking to other teenagers, and all of a sudden they, you know, run away from home or whatever to go meet this person, and it's not who they find out. And,
yeah.
I mean,
yep.
and and you just don't, how can you protect from all that stuff? So, yeah, you're going to put yourself, you know, and you being a mother and, you know, a wife for so long, it's kind of going to be a darker kind of area that you're going to put yourself into.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, just I relate it to the mother character in, it's called The Good Sister, the next thriller that's coming out. It's coming in, it's going on sale in September, this September. But I related to the mother, and I also related to the daughter just trying to be accepted. You know, she's in high school, and I thought things back when we were kids were a lot less complicated, but there are certain elements to that that remain the same no matter what. You know, kids want to be accepted. They want to have friends. You know, they want to belong to a group. And now that the Internet is involved, it's just so much more complex. So that's where I really went with this first book that I wrote.
Yeah. Well, because when we were growing up, you actually had to talk to the person face-to-face and meet them and say, oh, yeah, you are real.
Exactly.
Now you don't have to do that. Yeah.
There was never any doubt.
Yeah, never any doubt. But that's coming up this year, and right now it's the trilogy with Night Watcher, Wish Sleepwalker, and the latest book, which is out, called Shadow Killer. And, Wendy, we want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. You know, we'll see you in Thriller Fest this year.
Yeah, and I'm heading out on tour, too, John. I'm heading out with Allison Galen. We're going through the Midwest and down to Florida in the next couple of weeks. So readers can find the schedule on my website or on Facebook. Look me up, and I will friend you, and love to hear from readers.
Yeah, and we're going to see some pictures of the snow you're going to post on Facebook here shortly, and we're
really
going to see all that fun stuff.
Yep, all set. That sounds good.
All right.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for coming on. I mean, it's great that you're able to do it, and your electric's on, so at least your heat's on, and you're nice and warm, and now you can see the nice, fluffy blanket of clouds that you have floating outside your house.
Right. Thanks a lot, Mr. California.
I know. Yeah, hey, you know what? We woke up this morning, and there was frost on my windows, and I go, honey, look outside, it snowed.
Aww.
And then she goes, this isn't snow, and I said, that's Southern California snow. So it was cold here. But it's sunny now, and it's going to be 65, so sorry.
Oh. Well,
like
enjoy
we said,
that.
Whenever you're
John.
In Atlanta, you can always give us a call, and, you know, we'll meet up and we'll do whatever. So you don't come out here too often, I know, to the West Coast, but
right.
You do make it out every so often.
Yeah, I will holler.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, Wendy, enjoy. Thank you. We will talk with you later. We'll see you in July.
Thank you. See you in July, John. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is Wendy Corsi-Staub and the trilogy that is out right now with the latest book that just came out called Shadow Killer. Before that was Sleepwalker and Night Watcher. You can get all those. You can find a lot more information out on WendyCorsiStaub.com with all the books she has written. She's been doing this success for over 20 years. So if you haven't heard of her yet, you better start picking them up and start getting through them, because you're going to be hours upon hours upon hours of just nothing more than pure, great entertainment. And that's what it's all about. And we want to thank all of our guests here for coming on today. Brett Battles was on this morning, was on the first segment, talking about his latest theories and everything he's got going on with the Project Eden, and that's brettbattles.com. Then we also had Aman Kabachek, and he was on, and he was talking about, you know, a lot on the stage, and you can find out more on amankabachek.com and everything that he's got going on. So we've had a great show. You know, we're going to be back here in 2 weeks, and who we got on here in 2 weeks? We have some, I mean, this might be California, but it looks like we got some internet issues, but that's okay. Trying to get everything together. But in 2 weeks, we got, let me see my schedule coming up here. Lisa Gardner, Deborah Ludford, Harrison Demchick, and Amy Lignor is going to be on. And you need to check out the magazine also, which is out right now. And you can come and contact editor@suspensemagazine.com. to find out and get free issues on that. We have Lisa Gardner in there doing some writing tips, Andrew Gross. We have Alan Russell. Robert Crace is in the February issue. So a lot of exciting things coming up. And, again, we will see you all in 2 weeks. Check us out. Have a good one. We're out of here.